We go now to Stacey Abrams, who won Georgia's Democratic primary earlier this year and became the first Black woman to win a major party nomination for governor.
We are writing the next chapter of Georgia's future, where no one is unseen, no one is unheard, and no one is uninspired.
I think that my campaign signals the continuing change in what the face of leadership looks like in America. And I'm proud to be part of that vanguard. I look at women like Paulette Jordan in Idaho, who would be the first Native American governor, or Michelle Lujan Grisham, who's running to be the Latina governor of New Mexico. And I think that my election signals how important it is to have candidates who look like and have the same life experiences as everyday Americans.
During her campaign, there were people who said she shouldn't run at all because of her heavy debt burden, largely from student loans. Abrams told me that's why she needed to run.
People were so excited to hear a prominent figure, I mean, someone running for governor, actually address the realities of daily life in America. I have been extraordinarily successful, and I'm grateful for every opportunity I've had. And yet I still grapple with student loan debt. I grapple with paying for healthcare costs for my family. One of my favorite stories, I was standing in the airport and I was in line to get coffee or something. And a guy who worked in the restaurant next to where I was standing comes across to my shop and just hugs me. And I've never met him before and was a bit taken aback at first. And then he kind of grabbed my shoulders and he said, "Thank you. I'm still in student loan debt. Thank you for running and thank you for talking about it." And then he walked away.
Now Georgia Democratic gubernatorial nominee Stacey Abrams looks ahead to the elections in November, where she has a shot at becoming the first Black woman ever elected governor in the United States. And Abrams told me we need to think about who is really given the chance to run for office.
As long as we allow ourselves to believe that only those with economic independence have the right to stand for office, the right to speak for our population, we will continue to get the same types of policies that we have, which ignore the realities of having to make these choices. And it's hard. There are folks who legitimately questioned whether or not my inability to make every single payment, you know, immediately, whether that somehow signaled a lack of capacity on my part. Economic independence, it is a privilege, but it is a more important privilege to be able to talk about it. And that was a risk. In my case, the risk paid off and people were gratified to hear from me. But there are a lot of folks who walk away from their opportunities and their dreams because they don't think they have the right. And not just running for office. I met a woman named Pam when I was during the primary in Macon. And when I talked to her about her dreams, she talked about her daughters and sending them to college. She talked about taking care of her granddaughter or her new grandchild. And when I said, "But what do you want?" She said, "You know, I've been a cashier at Piggly Wiggly for 20 years. I think that's the only job I'll ever have." But more importantly, she said, "Nobody ever asked me." And when I pushed her on it, she said she wanted to start a daycare center, but she didn't think anyone would ever invest in her.
And part of that is true. I mean, the women and women of color historically have very low levels of investment of people, you know, whether it's in Silicon Valley or outside.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm so excited about my opportunity, because I know why she doesn't think she can do it. I know the fear that grips her. I know the sense of insecurity and the sense of disconnect. And because I understand it as a personal matter, I'm going to be the strongest advocate for making certain that Pam gets the same type of investment that we're willing to give to Fortune 500.
Talking about this, I mean, you are in Georgia, which is still considered a red state. I mean, President Trump won Georgia with just over 50% of the vote. How do you get past, or do you talk to and message to the whole electorate there? I mean, we're in such a politically divided time that in order to win this election, you're going to have to reach out to other constituents.
There's a conversation about this being an historic campaign. Part of the history making is the profile that I bring to the campaign. But what also makes our campaign historic is our investment in listening to voters who don't feel seen or heard and talking to them about how we build a thriving and diverse economy in every part of the state, talking to everyone about how I can be the public education governor. and how I can make certain that everyone has access to healthcare. That's a conversation that cuts across demography. It cuts across community. You pointed out that it's 50%, a little more than 50% voted for Donald Trump. But the reality is more than a million Democrats, more than a million Democrats and independent thinkers didn't vote in the last gubernatorial election. They stayed home because they didn't see that their voices would matter. My mission is to make certain that my message tells them their voices matter.
And, I mean, obviously, we're in a moment of American history with what's happening at the southern border right now, and a lot of the rhetoric that we're seeing. A lot of your opponents have been pretty anti-immigration. Do you think that that message is resonating in the state of Georgia? And if so, is that going to hurt your campaign?
I think there are those who unfortunately share this tendency to demonize immigrants as an excuse for challenges that we face as a community, challenges we face as a society. I stand proudly with our immigrant communities, especially those who are seeking asylum in the United States, who are trying to take care of themselves and their families and their children. And I strongly oppose anyone who would use the plight of immigrants as a political wedge issue to try to gain attention. But I will say this, I have worked hard to be a consensus builder. You know, people always know where I stand, that I'm progressive, but that I can work across the aisle to get things done. And the way we win this election is not by trying to fight mano a mano with those who would echo the sort of the divisive and immoral sometimes rhetoric coming out of the right, but it's by getting support from a broad coalition of Democrats, of those who've been left behind, and of independent thinkers who, seeing the reality of some of this rhetoric, realize that they have to make a different choice in this upcoming election.
Stacey Abrams is the Georgia Democratic gubernatorial nominee and author of Minority Leader, How to Lead from the Outside and Make Real Change. Stacey, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
At the end of this week, my colleague Amy Walter will be talking about leadership in this country. Amy's broadcasting from the Aspen Ideas Festival, where she's spending the next few days talking to some of the country's biggest and brightest thinkers, writers, and policy influencers. These are people with great ideas, and in a way, they're the gatekeepers to the conversations we have in this country about how to create change. But there's a bigger question at stake. When it comes to the decisions that are made in this country about the issues that matter to you, things like the economy, the environment, and politics, is there real leadership in this moment? Do you trust it?
Denise McQuinn, Dallas, Texas. We don't have any adequate leadership. They are destroying agencies and protections for environment and financial institutions.
Hey, this is Steve in Alphabet City, and I got to say no. Where to begin? We're going nowhere on climate change because we're the only country in the world where people debate whether or not it even exists. We're going backwards on racism, and it's only gotten harder to be black in terms of wealth and income since 1980. And our elected officials consistently vote in the interests of their corporate paymasters. Public opinion has basically zero effect on them.
And we want to hear you in that mix. To add your voice to the conversation, just call us, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or send us a tweet, at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.